Saturday night edition of the Anaheim Calling podcast. The Ducks taking on the Arizona Coyotes tonight with the chance to make it five in a row. Is that correct, Jake? By the way, Jake Rudolph joined me tonight.
Yep.
That's your intro. Is you helping me out here with this?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think it would have been five in a row is what
yes,
it would have
been. So the Ducks with a chance to make it a five-game winning streak. Instead, the streak will have to end at four. Jake and I were just chatting about the game here before we started recording. And Jake's big takeaway from tonight is that you can't win every game, and that certainly applies here tonight. The Ducks dropping this one 2-0 against the Coyotes. And, you know, a game in which the Ducks had an ability, once again, to, solidify. They could have actually been second in the Pacific Division had they won tonight. I don't know how long that would have lasted, but not a great performance, so let's just get right into it. The only goal of the game that was, that wasn't an empty netter, was scored, yeah. I forget by who, on Arizona, but just kind of a weird play. You thought there might have been some goalie interference in that play.
Yeah, so I think that that's one of those ones where you kind of look at it and it's almost like, why not try to challenge it? Because
what if?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's, I mean, for those that don't know, and for the offside challenge, if you challenge it and it's ruled the call on the ice stands or is confirmed, you get a penalty. For goaltender interference, that's not the case. If you're wrong and the call on the ice stands, it's just whatever. You lose your timeout is actually what happens. But to me, that's kind of worth it. And I mean, if they challenge that and it gets overturned, it's a different game. But so what I saw in that play is that you kind of see Fowler and the Arizona Coyote player coming in to in front of the net, and it's kind of engaged in battle. And Fowler kind of makes a bit of contact there with Ryan Miller. And to me, it kind of happens because the Arizona Coyote player gives him a bit of a shove. And it's not a whole lot, but it's enough to kind of throw Miller off when he's coming across the crease. And if you watch it, he's kind of hindered with his ability to track the puck because of that play. And to me, that kind of sets him off with an ability to basically make a play on the shot. And that's kind of the intent of the goaltender interference rule, is they're trying to look at to see whether the play stopped the goaltender's ability to make a play on the puck. And to me, that was.
Right. I mean, I'm going to have to disagree with you a little bit there, just because I think that if you look at the play, I think the rule, at least from my understanding, and I mean, my understanding is pretty much as good as someone who's never watched this game before, especially this year with the way that the rule has just been kind of all over the place in its application. But just from my understanding, it has to be on the shot itself. And, you know, Ryan Miller did get a player pushed into him, but then has time to recover and get set for the shot, or has time to at least, it clearly, like, I'm not going to disagree with you in the sense that that he was interfered with at one point and that it potentially did hinder his ability. But my only stipulation there would be, well, was it when the shot was taken?
So
because it wasn't when the shot was taken.
So that goes they've ruled on plenty of them this year where it's, if there was contact and it's way, even if it's like a good 10, 15 seconds before the shot is taken, if it stopped the goaltender's ability to get into a position to then make the save on the puck, that is goaltender interference per the way they've been calling it this season.
Yeah.
And even in seasons past, there was one, I think a year or two ago, where Carey Price in the playoffs kind of got taken out and a goal came a good 5-10 seconds later and they called it back because he wasn't given the ability to kind of go back and get into a spot to make the play on the puck.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not really a fan of that, honestly. I think if you're not, well, I mean, I'm saying this as a former goalie, by the way. So, you know, the goalies out there might disagree with me, but like, if you're not interfered with, like if they're going to call it back for something that happened like 10 seconds before or whatever, I just think that that's too lenient to the goalies, you know, like, come on, like contact's going to happen. The crease basically doesn't matter anymore, it seems. So I'm fine with it. As long as it's not clearly interfered with on the shot, I'm kind of fine with a little bumping or whatever, and it eventually leads to the goal. Because I want to see goals, so I don't really care.
I think if it's outside the crease, I'm good with it. Inside the crease, because it's written completely differently for inside the crease and outside the crease.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to make incidental contact inside the crease to stop him from making the play on the puck. And I think that's what it comes down to is, if you watch the way that play set up, Miller, when he slides across, it throws him off, and it does.
Right.
It, if you purely look at the definition and the wording of play, making the play on the puck, and I've said that a bunch now, I probably sound like I'm on repeat, but it clearly stops his ability. And so I don't know if that gets called back. I think it might be a little bit too much of a gray area with the fact that it's Fowler makes contact, but I think comes down to is why not? If it's that.
Right. Yeah. Like there's a non-zero chance that gets called back if they look hard enough at it.
Yeah.
Depending, like, it's one of those where if you're on the right night and the right referee looks at it, maybe they call it back. It's interesting though, because I feel like we haven't really talked at all about the goalie interference scandal around the league this year. It feels like the Ducks have kind of, I feel like the Ducks have been more affected by the offsides challenge as opposed to the goaltender interference kind of fiasco.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, especially if you look back at last year's playoffs with how many times the Ducks were involved with controversial goaltender interference plays. And
it really hasn't happened this year.
No, it really hasn't. And so I think maybe they've been a bit lucky. Maybe it's just the fact that there's only been one or two bigger plays and they're happening to kind of the more high profile teams in the league, like the Connor McDavid one, like the Austin Matthews one. And overall, it's actually not a huge deal, but because it's happening to these higher profile teams, it's getting more airtime.
Right. Yeah. And that's kind of the same. Like, that's a very common theme in sports. I mean, in the NBA, for those that follow the NBA or don't know, like, there was the whole scandal of, you know, I don't know if you've heard of the Hack-a-Shaq rule.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And in the NBA, it was happening a lot, or it wasn't, people felt like it was a huge problem, but it was really only happening recently with guys like on higher profile teams. And so that raised kind of the concern for the issue, although it was really only happening to the big teams that get all the airtime. And so that's why people got upset. And so I feel like this might be a similar situation in the NHL.
Yeah.
But let's get on with this game. So, I mean, that goal, there really weren't any, like, I swear I watched this game, by the way. Like, I watched every minute of this game, and there really just weren't too many notable things on my end. I mean, I did see at times, I thought that Montour and Fowler are starting to look more comfortable together.
Yep, I agree with
but
that.
But the Ducks just really did not threaten in tonight's game. And by the way, I thought this before looking at the stats, and the stats just complete. I mean, it's not a pretty picture for the Ducks.
It's bad.
In the second period alone, the Ducks did not register one high danger scoring chance at 5-on-5. And on the night, outchanced in the high danger department 12-5. So that kind of says it all right there.
Yeah, it just wasn't a good night. And that's at 5-on-5 specifically. And yeah, it just wasn't poor. I mean, for those of you on Twitter, I was the one running the Anaheim calling account tonight. And if you follow that account, you would know I did not talk a whole lot about the game. There were many other conversations I was having because the game was not that exciting. There wasn't a whole lot to talk about. Talking about beer was more fun.
Talking about beer is always more fun. So third period, Ducks make a push. I mean, a pretty obvious kind of like, all right, yeah, like, let's effects. Wake up, guys. Yeah, score effects, trying to come back. And the Coyotes are able to seal it with an empty netter. Ducks are now sitting in the final wild card spot, and I'm going to give you a little props here, Jake, because you kind of, I think you mentioned on the last pod or in one of our conversations that you see St. Louis kind of falling back and potentially not making it, and they are currently sitting outside of the playoffs. The Ducks are currently sitting in the spot that the Blues have kind of occupied for the majority of these last few weeks, so kudos to you.
Thank you. I really don't know if I've said that, but I've thrown a lot of shit at the wall over this.
Been really down on the Blues. I think you've been down on the Blues.
Okay, I'll go with it.
But
I think
maybe I'm just totally
you might
out
be
to lunch on that.
Confusing them for the Wild or for the not the Wild, the Jets.
No. I'm well aware of your Jets hate, and I totally disagree with it.
been down on the Blues. I'll take credit for it. They are not in the playoff spot, and it's interesting how far they've fallen because for the first half of the season, they were one of the best teams in the league.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is interesting, and I honestly haven't really followed them that closely recently.
Either.
Yeah, because in the beginning of the season, they were a great story. So anyway, back to tonight's game. Some numbers on the night, just to kind of round out the bit of the recap here. So I tried to kind of I'm looking at the score and venue adjusted numbers, you know, to kind of hopefully correct for some of the score effects there. But even so, I mean, Cam Fowler, really solid game tonight. A plus, well, I'll just look at the regular numbers because I don't want to do all this math right now. Yeah, I mean, just like a 75% Corsi, plus 17 shot attempts at 5-on-5. And Jakob Silverberg with a 70.97. Brandon Montour with a 69.44%. So nice. Pairing is, you know, kind of on the come up. And what's interesting, and I guess you'd have to parse out the matchups a little bit, but if you look at the Pedersen-Manson pairing tonight at 5-on-5, both guys just struggling mightily. I mean, basically every stat that I just read you for the Fowler-Montour pairing, flip it. Marcus Pedersen on the ice tonight. 8 shot attempts for, 21 against, a 27% Corsi. Same thing for Josh Manson. So
yeah,
I don't really know who's like the big lion on Arizona that you're like matching up against. I guess maybe the line of Clayton Keller, but in rough night, I guess, for that duo.
And it really felt like the only line that really was consistently getting chances and kind of bears it out in the numbers is the Kessler line, which is interesting mm-hmm. because yeah. they've probably been the line that struggled the most of late. And so I guess if we want to take away one positive is that line seemed to get going tonight, and that's kind of a good sign moving forward.
Yeah, in the last 10 games, it's been one of Anaheim's, if not the worst line that the Ducks have had, at least from a statistical point of view.
Agreed.
And, you know, we're still kind of in this awkward period where, although everyone knows that Ryan Kessler is not 100%, that he is still getting the tough matchups. And I think there may have something to do with those numbers.
On to Ryan Kessler really quickly. Kelly Kosola was called up today and kind
interesting. Of interesting. But you viewed it as a paper transaction, right?
No, I actually didn't view this one as a paper transaction. I had mentioned on Twitter that there's going to be a fair amount of paper transactions on Monday specifically because in order for guys to be playing in the
Do you want to tell everyone what we mean by a paper transaction?
Yeah. So basically, a paper transaction means the guy's going to be sent down, but he's not actually going to go down to the goal, so he'll be sent down on Monday and called back up on Tuesday. So he'll probably just be chilling in his hotel room, not being able to practice for that one day with the team, but it's just him getting sent down and called up by in paperwork sense. He's not actually going down.
Just think Shea Theodore's 2016-17 season.
Yeah. So, and the reason for that happening on Monday specifically is in order for guys to play in the playoffs in the AHL, they have to be on the roster at the trade deadline. So anyone that's waiver exempt, like an Andre Kasha, Kelly Kosola, Marcus Pedersen, these types of guys all will probably be sent down on Monday morning and then called back up on Tuesday. The only thing also to keep note of is after Monday, there are no longer any roster limits. So you can have more than 23 guys on your roster, but you are limited to 5 non-emergency call-ups from the minor league team until that minor league team season is over. And that means their playoff run.
Right. Right. So it's, there's a lot of CBA kind of stuff going on.
Yes.
And, we have some breaking news.
Oh,
I think
this
is the first time we've broke. Yeah. We have some breaking news. This is not a Carlson trade alert, but it's a pretty big nugget recently, just dropped here by Travis Yost. I guess it's earlier. Oh, I guess he's saying corroborating reports from earlier here, but Nashville has emerged as a second team in the Carlson hunt.
Well,
so
yeah, that came out a little bit earlier in the week. Okay. Also from,
I don't think I've seen Nashville.
That was
though.
From Pierre LeBrun earlier in the week, like on Wednesday that came out.
That is terrifying.
Yes, 100%. I mean, but
Erik Karlsson, I mean, I don't know what it'll cost the Preds, though.
Yeah, that's
because
crazy.
They've already dumped a lot of stuff to pick up Kyle Turris.
And there's no way that they're going to be able to take on the Bobby Ryan contract, I would think, with all of the money they have locked up. So they would have to do it giving up a lot of picks and prospects.
Sneaky Bobby Ryan like contender team is the Canadiens because they have about $8 million in cap space. And I think $8.5 million in cap space. And if they want to be a third team to kind of dump off Bobby Ryan, I feel like they might emerge if they want to go that route.
Hmm.
So we'll see.
Oh, to the Kelly Kosola call up. CJ was mentioning earlier in the day that he kind of thought maybe something would be up and that's why they called up. I actually view it as I think they called him up because Kessler might not play in both games of this back to back.
That would make sense if it were true.
And so I think they called him up with the specific intent of playing him tomorrow or today, whichever game Kessler didn't play, which means he'll play tomorrow because They don't want Derek Grant or Antoine Vermette in that third line or second line role, whatever they're going to call it for that game.
Go ahead, finish that thought.
Oh, no, that was it.
Okay, so a couple of things, and I'm just going to round out the recap for tonight.
Go for it.
So that'll do it. Just a last note on the Pettersson-Manson pairing. This might be the most damning number. At 5-on-5, the Ducks did not register a high-danger scoring chance while those two were on the ice, and they gave up 7 and 8 against, respectively.
Yep. It's a bit of a learning curve right now for Pettersson.
Yeah, but, you know, I thought he had good moments, so I'd have to look back at the tape and see kind of, like, what happened there. But,
and that,
you
this
know,
is going to happen with a young guy making his first appearance. He's going to have his good
you,
games. Because
you never see these games from Manson. You just don't. So.
But
let's let's get on then to the – so I'm glad you brought up the Kalakoslo call-up, because this brings me to the next point, which is you brought up Antoine Vermette. Do you think there's a chance that Antoine Vermette gets traded by Monday?
No.
Really?
100% no.
Is it because of the no trade?
I think that's part of it. I think the other part is he only has one year left on his deal. I think Carlisle
But wouldn't
likes...
that make him an attractive kind of piece?
But I think that Carlisle and Murray like him enough, even if they're scratching him, he's the exact type of guy they're going to want in the lineup in the playoffs to potentially win them a face-off at the end. We know the way the organization thinks.
Oh, yeah. They love their face-offs.
Even if they think he's been slow, they're going to put him in the playoffs as a winger, worst case, on the fourth line for him to come out and take that face-off when they need it. You know that's going to be the case. There's no way they're trading him. I just don't buy it. I mean, I would
put it at non-zero. I think that in this current market, there's a lot of action at the top. I think that the big pieces, the big fish, are. I think some people will argue that they're a bit overpriced this year, but I think it's going to turn into a buyer's market because I just think that there's just a large demand of these kind of top six wingers, forwards who have term or are rentals, and I think that that hurts the teams that are selling.
Yeah.
So I think we'll see the prices come down by Monday. I wouldn't be surprised to see the returns be somewhat disappointing. But so my takeaway from that is I feel like teams will be looking to add on the cheap. I think that, you know, Elliot Freeman calls it smart buyers. And I could definitely see be Antoine Vermette that a contender would try to kind of snatch up and, you know, as and like you described, be that guy who wins an important faceoff in the playoffs. Now, presumably the Ducks are contenders themselves, and so they would probably want to keep Vermette. But I would put it at non-zero that he gets moved. But we'll see.
I could buy that, but I would put it maybe at 5-10%.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, yeah, like non-zero is like the most I'll give it. Like the most I'll say on it. I don't think that it's this crazy chance. Yeah. And I still think they value him. What do we got?
Yeah. I want to do this real quick and then we can get into a bunch of the trades. But I wanted to mention that Rob Volman, who's a really, really good follow on Twitter, he has some awesome books like Stat Shot. He also has Hockey Abstract. He sent out a tweet earlier that says trade deadline activity by team since 2005. And if you look at it, the Ducks have made the most moves at the deadline since then, and it's not even close. The Coyotes are the second highest team at 50, and the Ducks are the highest at above 60 deals made at the deadline. And majority of those deals happen actually on the final day. And so for everyone who kind of says like the Ducks never do anything or they don't go after rentals, they have in the past, and they've consistently done that in the past. And so,
which is very inconvenient for the narrative that Bob Murray was trying to perpetuate in his recent interview.
Yes. And so that's the very, and that's the thing is that kind of, a lot of people have been asking me, and you've probably been getting the same thing. What do we see happening? Do they make a move? Do we think they stand pat? I think they're going to make a move no matter what. I think that we have history to show that.
It's more of what magnitude will this move be?
Yes.
That's the biggest question. So we, unfortunately tonight, guys, we're going to be a bit of a shorter show, shorter episode. I think our big preview will be tomorrow night since the trade deadline. Hopefully, fingers crossed, nothing happens tomorrow before the show. Or if something does, we'll be able to break it down on the show. But I actually have to be out of here in 10 minutes.
Real life happens.
So, yeah, it's unfortunate. But we have 10 minutes to kind of talk trades, talk a little trade deadline, a little warm up for tomorrow. So I'll kick it off by saying, and you've already kind of started alluding to it, I'm not sure if I see the Ducks making a splash tomorrow or a splash by Monday, but it doesn't feel like it's impossible either. I feel like Bob Murray has been playing this trade deadline like a grizzled poker player, and I think he's trying to bring the prices down. And I think he's trying to posture to the other GMs, I'm not moving, I'm not doing anything, to kind of, you know, like I said, bring the prices down in what should be a buyer's market. Cool. So does that mean that the Ducks pick up an Evander Kane and Max Pacioretty? I'm not even convinced that the Canadians will move Pacioretty, but I could see the Ducks feasibly making a move for one of those bigger name pieces.
Yeah, I think especially if it gets closer to the deadline and the team wanting to sell them gets desperate. A lot of times what we've actually seen in the past, and I'm kind of going to name a couple different trades here, the Ducks are one of those teams that if they do that big move, it's usually right on the deadline. You look at the James Wisniewski trade from a couple years ago. That came out, I think it was technically after the deadline. It's one of those where they got the call in before the deadline. You look at way back in, it would have been 2009 or 2010, the Ryan Whitney for Lubomir Vishnovsky trade, that happened right at the deadline. Kind of these bigger type of deals happen around then for this team. I think a big thing is kind of what you're saying is that Bob Murray really kind of wants to get that maximum value and kind of wants to wait a bit. Whether that's the best strategy to wait and wait and wait and then potentially lose out on a guy. But there is the benefit that you could get him for less.
Exactly. I think that in this current market, I would be comfortable kind of waiting until the last second, only because I want to pounce on a buyer that's, like you kind of said, just desperate, you know, like at the very end. And if that doesn't materialize, I wouldn't say the Ducks really miss out, because, you know, some guys are going to be hitting free agency. And, you know, the Ducks are in a position, I think, where, you know, I've been beating this drum all season long about how they have to be all in. And if they do their due diligence and try to get a big piece and miss, and, you know, they just don't land one, I think that's not the worst thing in the world, because, you know, this is a franchise that has to supplement itself with prospects and picks. And look, if you don't end up giving those up because the price was just too high or another team just gave a better offer, that's not a doomsday scenario, I don't think.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. The place they really need help, and we've talked about this kind of at length on this podcast and really kind of let it out there or put it out there why, but they need help on the blue line. I think a forward acquisition will help. But
see, so are we still sure about that?
I'm positive on that.
How long do you think the Pettersson experiment lasts?
I think do you think he gets
sent back down, or is this, because if, let's assume that this, let's just say, and we don't know this obviously, but let's just say that this current arrangement of the blue line holds until the rest of the season. This is what we have the rest of the season. Do you still maintain that they need help back there?
Yes.
Really? Yes. See, I actually somewhat disagree, but I want to hear your case for it first.
I mean, my case on it is that, I mean, part of it's me thinking the worst, in the sense of I have a gut feeling that come playoff time, we know the coaching staff, we know what they believe in veteran presence and that type of stuff, that the very first mistake that a Marcus Pettersson would make, he comes out of the lineup and Bojmé and Bjeksa are both in that lineup. And I think anything you can do to provide other pieces that keep that from happening, you should do. I think Pettersson's been good. I think he has a future with this team. Do I think he's the solution long-term and for this team to be a contender? I don't think so. And that's just my take on that right now.
Interesting. See, I guess I'm just a bit higher on Pettersson in the now than you might be, because I just think that he kind of solves the quandary that they've been stuck in, which is, you know, both BX and Beauchemin in the lineup. And it just hasn't happened since he's been called up. And tomorrow it will continue because Beauchemin doesn't play back to backs. And then, you know, like, I think the Montour Lindholm pairing, I'm a little higher on it than I was maybe a week ago. And then, you know, I think Manson Pettersson can work. And look, if things really go bad, you can always reshuffle and get Lindholm and Manson back together and still have Pettersson in the lineup. You're just keeping one of the two, you know, BX or Beauchemin out of the lineup. So I would almost be comfortable maintaining this blue line through the season so that I can do more to help up front, because as we're kind of seeing with this team, I mean, look, it's only one game, but no scoring chance in the second period, for example, against the Coyotes. I just feel like they need – I feel like they need another spark plug offensively up front.
I just think that it
– they also kind of need both, so that doesn't mean they don't need the other. Yeah.
I think you're going to see a lot tonight that the Ducks need or forwards, and I've gotten a couple of people tweeting at me kind of asking, am I really sure that the Ducks need defense, not a forward? And – I just think that a lot of what you're going to see with people wanting a forward, wanting Pacioretty, thinking that this is a sign the Ducks need to go get him, I think that's really reactionary. And I think if you look as a whole at the last little bit, the forward group has been fine and they've been producing fine. And I really do feel like this team is kind of deep and deeper than anything that we've seen in the last year or two.
Right. But let's look at it this way, though. I mean, isn't it like in the playoffs, do you think that do you still feel as great about this forward group as you do in the regular season?
100%, yeah. Because you can roll those three lines out. You have a decent enough fourth line. You look at the forward group now as compared to last year, which one would you take? Knowing with where everyone is at the current moment, going into the playoffs, health-wise, everything-wise, what they've done so far this season, which roster would you take forward-wise?
Well, that's not my issue. My issue is, I mean, clearly I think this one is better with the presence of Henrik, but I just don't think – I think what Pittsburgh has shown in, you know, its two consecutive Stanley Cups is having one, you know, kind of dynamic game-breaking guy on each line. Obviously, no one's going to have a Malkin and Crosby on different lines.
Yeah.
But now they have Brassard and they have Kessel in that third line, and those guys could be first-liners on some teams.
Yeah.
And I just think that in the playoffs, the Kessel line's – in a world of trouble right now, because I just don't know what Kessler's going to look like in the playoffs. And then the Henrik Kasha line, I don't see any game breakers on that line. And so then you're still relying on the Getzlaff line.
Let me ask you this. So this is kind of,
and then the fourth line just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
In all this.
Let me ask you this, because this is what it comes down to in my mind, and it's all about kind of cost benefit type of thing. When you acquire a forward, let's say. The name being thrown around, and kind of I'll briefly mention this, but NHL trade rumors kind of just was aggregating a bunch of different information. Elliot Friedman mentioned that the Ducks could be a potential landing spot for Vanek. So if you have a Thomas Vanek coming in the lineup, where does he sit?
Oh, well, okay. Let's pause 1 second here. Vanek is not in the class of player I'm talking about.
Okay, like, we're talking about like Pacioretty then.
Yes, we're talking about a Kane, a Hoffman, okay. A Pacioretty, that ilk.
And
no,
so Vanek
isn't changing your life, yeah. That's for sure.
And so if we bring in, let's say, an Evander Kane, and he goes on, let's say, for instance, he takes Richie's spot, Richie goes down in the lineup.
Oh, and that makes a huge difference.
But what's a bigger influence, having that or getting, let's say, the name we've thrown around, no idea if he's available, but I think the perfect fit for the Ducks would be a Nick Hjalmarsson. You put him with Fowler. Where are you getting the bigger benefit, the bigger upgrade?
I still think Evander Kane.
Really?
Absolutely. I think it's
with Hjalmarsson.
Because Hjalmarsson is so limited in what he does. I mean, he's great, by the way. I don't want to diminish, you know, the type of player he is. But when you're comparing bringing in, you know, an offensive force in Kane or Pacioretty or Hoffman, as opposed to a guy who's really his only role is to suppress the other team's offense, and that certainly has a ton of value. I just think adding a dynamic goal scorer is just totally changes everything about this roster.
I guess that's where you and I disagree a bit. I don't disagree with that. It changes
because like
the
how
roster.
Do you because then you have to because then it's a nightmare for the other team to match up against.
But it is
it's
already
a complete
I think.
Nightmare.
I think
no. See, I don't think anyone's scared of the Kessler line right now.
Well, yeah, getting Kane doesn't change that.
Yeah, but the thing is, then that takes a ton of pressure off the Kessler line, and then, you know, you have a Kane. You can put Kane on the first line, on the third line, and then, you know, you're presented with very difficult decisions to make if you're the other team.
I'm not disagreeing with the fact that it would help and help it a lot. I just think if you're looking at the place that will have the most impact, if putting a guy with Fowler to be able to play those high minutes with the team and suppress shots and really provide Fowler with a good pairing and. Him and Montour have been fine together. I really don't have a whole lot of qualms with that pairing. But I think if you put Hjalmarsson with them, I think that blue line is scary and scary, scary good. And I think we've seen in the last couple of years that I guess there's a couple different models you can go with. You could point out Pittsburgh as a reason to go get Kane, but you can also point out Nashville as a reason to go get a Jalmerson, because building from the blue line also can bring you a lot of success. You look at, did the Nashville forward group last year scare you that much offensively? Not really. It was their blue line and their blue line.
But see, that's where I disagree though, because the blue line for Nashville and the blue, and like, they don't, the guys that they're trotting out are offensive forces though. I mean, Yossi, Ellis, Subban, these are puck movers who can provide a ton of offense. Jalmerson doesn't fit any of that. I don't think he's changing your team like those guys do.
I think he's changing the team, but for a different, in a different way, because he's allowing Fowler to jump into the play more and have that solid option.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think adding a top offensive guy, that just, I think that really just changes things, and especially if it's Pacioretty. I mean, look, I don't disagree with you that Jalmerson would be a good ad, but my own stance is I think I would go the offense route. And, you know, we'll let the listeners decide what they think this team should do. We've kind of presented our stance on it, but it's a good conversation to have, because I'm sure these are somewhat the conversations that are currently taking place within the Ducks front office.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, it's just kind of funny because I feel like you and I were on completely different sides of this argument a couple months ago.
Oh, like you were on the offense, and I was. Well, the thing is, my faith in this offense has gone down a bit. I just don't trust. Actually, it's not even that I don't trust. I don't think at all that Henrik, Richie, Kasha is a meaningful line in the playoffs. If that's the go-to second scoring line. I just don't believe that. And I understand, you know, Kasha has these great rates, but in the playoffs, it's just a different beast. And we've kind of seen that Kessler is severely hampered right now. And I think they're going to have issues scoring goals in the playoffs. I feel like that's a distinct possibility. And if you throw in a guy who's great at that, I feel like then you almost look, I mean, Pittsburgh won the cup with, like, look, who was even on their blue line? And obviously, look, Crosby, Malkin.
Yeah.
But
there's two different models.
I don't think I think in the playoffs, you don't have to have three killer pairings. You need really one and a half, two at most. Because one of those is just not going to play.
GC Ducks fan chimes in with his typical great response. People, I have magic beans. Going to give them an Anaheim so they can get both offense and defense.
Well, and that universe certainly exists where the Ducks can maybe make a small ad on the blue line and move for a piece
maybe
up front.
Maybe like a name thrown about is Ian Cole, because that he is going to be flipped by Ottawa.
Ian Cole could be interesting, but I would be a little loath to give up anything kind of significant for him.
All right, so we're running a bit low on time. Do you want to jump into any of the trades, or we can do all that tomorrow?
Let's hit. If we have like one good question, let's jump into that. Outside of that, I'm not really seeing. What are your thoughts on the Brassard trade? Oh, or was there a question?
There was one, but it's just basically kind of what's Nick Ritchie's future with the franchise. I think he's here for
He'll be around. He's cheap, cost-controlled. Yeah. Teams love that.
One quick rumor that I just read from Nick Kiprios, hearing that Chris Kelly has come to terms with an NHL team. He doesn't have to clear waivers, hearing it's a West Coast team. So.
Ah, Chris Kelly. Wow. Oh, okay, you want to try guessing?
Let's go with San Jose.
Chris Kelly, San Jose.
They need forwards.
They do. Oh, man. I kind of want to satirically say Vancouver, just because
there's no way he's going to go to a non-playoff team.
Just because Vancouver would be the type of team to do something totally ridiculous. But I like your San Jose pick, but I'm going to go LA just for the sake of being different.
Okay, so the Brassard trade.
Give me a Brassard take, and then we'll get on out of here.
Brassard take, Vegas got kind of screwed over. Ottawa did pretty good. Pittsburgh did good.
Oh, I think this trade definitely bumps up Pittsburgh in my power rankings. I think that, you know, I was still, like, obviously not, like, down on them or anything, but I think now they're a whole lot scarier. Yeah. I mean, because Derek Brassard's a good player, not a world beater or anything, but if he's on your third line, that's, man.
Well, and so for those who didn't see that trade, here's the trade, and it's really the first blockbuster of the deadline. the Penguins got Derek Brassard, Vincent Dunn, and a third-round pick from Ottawa, and Tobias Lindberg from Vegas. Ottawa got Ian Cole, Philip Gustafson, a first-round pick in this upcoming draft, and a third-round pick in the 2019 draft from Pittsburgh. And then the Golden Knights got Ryan Reeves and 2018 fourth-round pick for retaining 40% of Derek Brassard's salary. So,
wow,
kind of a very interesting note on this trade is that it kind of came out that the reason Vegas got involved is it seemed like this trade was going to go down with Brassard going to a Western Conference team, specifically the Jets. And so they jumped in because they would rather see Brassard on the Penguins than on the Jets in terms
I love
of
that.
Having to play him in the playoffs. But it really feels like Vegas got very poor value for having to retain 40% of Brassard's salary.
Yeah, well, but the thing is, they have the space to where they can kind of mess around like that and
but
basically.
Ryan Reeves.
Yeah, but I feel like that's just like I think that the big thing for them there is the draft pick. You know, like I think they're but, just a team that's so just hoarding draft picks.
What was Tobias Lindberg though?
I don't know who Tobias Lindberg is.
So he is now in the AHL. So he was the person that went to Pittsburgh from Vegas.
Oh, okay. Well, I have no idea, man.
No, I'm just looking. So he was a fourth round pick. So they essentially gave up a fourth round pick from 2013 in order to get a fourth round pick in 2018 and Ryan Reeves plus salary cap or for salary cap retention.
Interesting.
So
all right. Well, I think that will do it. Yeah, that will do it for today's show, guys. I got to get on out of here. Quick hitting pod. Hey, we actually stayed true to our. We're gonna make this a short one today.
Compared to ending up at like 1 a.m.
Yeah,
still talking.
But the good news is that we will be right back tomorrow night, post Edmonton Oilers at 5 p.m. Should be another good one. Another game where the Ducks can obviously move up in the standings, and we might have some more news to talk about by the time the post game show rolls around. So that'll do it for tonight, guys. We will be right back talking to you in about 24 hours.
Something like that.
So that should be fun. And as always, make sure to check the show out on the Apple Podcast app. Leave a rating and a review if you enjoy the show. And also hit that subscribe button so that we can get that count up and so it comes right into your feed. SoundCloud.com/ACPod. If you're on SoundCloud, check us out there. As always, subscribe to make sure it goes directly to your feed. No hassle. Follow Jake on Twitter at ReindeerGames91. Weekly rankings will be out Monday. Follow me on Twitter.
Very Olympic this week.
Follow me on Twitter at Felix_Sicard. Tweeting out the show always. Writing, tweeting about the Ducks. Just a good stop. A good follow for Ducks content. And as always, AnaheimCalling.com at AnaheimCalling for all your Ducks content needs. That'll do it for us tonight, guys. We will catch you in a brief 24 hours. Talk to you then.
Bye.